This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas, powered by U Mobile.
Good morning, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mokhtar. In December 2020, global logistics giant DHL announced that it was injecting 690 million euros worth of investment into its Asia-Pacific operations over a two-year period. Malaysia is one of the beneficiaries of this investment in Southeast Asia. So how does it feature in the broader plans for DHL? Joining me today to discuss growth prospects in the logistics industry is Julian Yeo, Managing Director of DHL Express Malaysia and Brunei. Julian, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Shazana. Good morning, everyone. Very glad to be here and pleasure to be given the opportunity to speak here.
Now, you took on this role in February 2019.
Correct.
So you've been at the helm of DHL Express here throughout the pandemic, and crucially, you oversaw the delivery of vaccines throughout the country. So as the world's largest logistics firm, I think it's presumable that DHL would be better positioned to tackle all the challenges that came up during the pandemic. But I'm sure it wasn't smooth sailing for you. So what were the weak spots in DHL Malaysia that were revealed during the pandemic that you learned from?
So first, I'd like to cover this question on three areas. First and foremost was putting our people in the heart of everything that we do. So safety of our customers, safety of our people was utmost priority at that point of time. During the pandemic, obviously, there were a lot of SOPs, government SOPs that we needed to follow. And at that time, most of us were working from home. Luckily, we had 800 of our frontline workers who were very passionate, very engaged, very trained to still deliver shipments because we were classified under essential. So that was one. Secondly, was to make sure that we were able to keep serving our customers. At that point of time, as you know, globally, we came to a halt and many borders were closed. Most of the passenger flights were grounded, but we were lucky and we were prepared because we had four flights coming in and out of Malaysia. So we had to make sure that our operations still continue to make sure that the key industries that were approved to be operative under the MITI licenses and SOP, we continue to serve them, especially the pharma-related, vaccines-related and the tech-related and the essential goods. Thirdly was to make sure that we continue with our BCP. Mm. So one of the biggest gaps that we saw during the pandemic was there could be improvements with our BCP because nobody forecasted a pandemic with such amount of paramount of impact on people, on border closures and of movements of not just goods, but people as well.
I see. I'd like to get an idea of how much DHL Malaysia contributes to the group's global operations. I think looking at the annual report, the Asia-Pacific region makes up about 19% of DHL Group's revenues. Correct. How much of that comes from the Malaysia and Brunei operations?
Sure. So I won't be able to share exact numbers, but we are ranked top 20 globally. So if to be exact, we're actually number 17 in the globe.
17 out of
220 countries and territories.
Okay, all right.
So from that, you can see we're quite significant in terms of contribution.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, contrary to other industries, global logistics players like DHL saw record earnings over the past 2 years of the pandemic. How did this manifest in the Malaysian business? You know, what areas of growth did you see during the past 2 years?
Correct. So 2021 has been a record year, not just 2021. 2020 has been a record year. I'd like to give you an example. In 2021, till quarter three, 2021, we actually achieved the full results of 2020. And 2021, not just globally. Globally, obviously, it was a record EBIT year for DPDHL. But in Malaysia alone, we were looking at strong double-digit growth, mainly driven by e-commerce. E-commerce, obviously, when most of the people were locked down in 2020, e-commerce had a huge growth in 2020, and that gave us a big base. But that did not stop in 2021 because we saw continuous growth. And in 2020, when the pandemic hit us, obviously, we saw a slowdown in B2B movements, in manufacturing, in semiconductor, in tech. But that quickly recovered. In the first quarter of 2021, we saw that the volumes from manufacturing, especially in due to the supply chain, most of the goods were moved to air freight instead of sea freight because all the ports were congested, the ground deliveries were congested. So we had a lot of shipments to carry. And that was also a big growth, which continued to now 2022. So volumes during the pandemic, and now I'm not going to say post-pandemic, but we're seeing actually bigger bigger volumes compared to pre-pandemic period.
I see. And does this cut across all the different sectors then? Or does one, I suppose, contribute more than others to revenue growth?
Correct. It will be one sector that contribute to the overall. It will be the tech semicon sector. So tech then splits into telecommunications, into automotive, into aerospace. Yeah.
Okay, so that's the bulk of where the revenue for all these logistics demands is coming from. Back in 2019, before the pandemic, you said that DHL has some 50% market share in Malaysia.
Yeah.
Is that still the case?
That's still the case.
Would you say it cuts across all your different business segments? I think we've got four main business segments.
Yeah.
Would you say that you're 50% in all of them? Or
it's going to be hard for me to comment for the other business units, the e-commerce side, the DHL supply chain and DHL Global Forwarding, because they're operated separately.
Mm-hmm.
For DHL Express, we are confident that we're still market leader. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about e-commerce, because as you said, e-commerce is the driving factor.
Yeah.
There was a lot of growth for e-commerce. And this was something that your predecessor, Christopher Ong, mentioned as well back in 2018 when he was last here. Back at that time, e-commerce still seemed to be in its infancy stage. If you can imagine it, it was still quite new. How much has business picked up for DHL Malaysia in terms of e-commerce? If you can share some figures or percentages.
Yeah. So globally, we were looking at 20% growth. As an average across all the countries. In Malaysia, we were looking at 30 to 40% growth during the peak for e-commerce. Right? So obviously, we sort of stood to gain because of the border closures. And in many countries, most of the postal offices weren't able to operate because of the grounding of planes and because of the impact of the border closures. So I guess, as I've mentioned, those with dedicated flights out of a country will have benefits because we have got space to provide.
I see.
And in many instances, there were other smaller carriers who didn't have dedicated flights. They were relying on commercial aircrafts or passenger aircrafts, that those who have lost the connectivity. But with four planes flying in and out of KL and also Penang, we were able to provide that uplift capacity. And along the way, along the last 2 years, we actually increased. You mentioned about the investments we put into APAC. A huge chunk of it goes into aviation.
I see. Yeah. Okay. So you were actually managed to capitalize on, I suppose, what business other companies lost. You kind of came in during the pandemic and you've managed to ramp up.
Yeah. Besides the organic growth of e-commerce, which was really strong.
Mm. Yeah. Can I ask, and when it comes to e-commerce, who are your main customers in this field? Is it the major retailers? Is it the SME? I guess, what are the trends that you see in terms of e-commerce growth here in Malaysia that you're benefiting from?
Sure. A good mix. I would guess 60% are from the bigger MNCs or the global customers, and we've got 40%. We also seeing 40% of our SMEs stepping up to this segment. And for those SMEs who have stepped up to adopt e-commerce and digitalization, we saw a faster growth compared to the SMEs that didn't jump on the bandwagon.
Mm-hmm.
So going regional or going global has really had an upside for these SMEs. Until today, although we're seeing a bit of normalcy, people are going back to work, people are going back to shopping centres and malls, right? We're still seeing continuous growth of these SMEs who have last 2 years put in the technology, put in all the basics platform that they put to actually leverage on the e-commerce.
What was the differentiating factor between those SMEs that did decide to take the leap and go towards e-commerce and cross-border trade and digitalization versus those who don't, from your observation?
Sure. I would like to touch on 3 points. First thing is adoption of technology. I guess it requires investment. It requires partnership to look at some of the things that they want to be embarking on. It could be payment, it could be marketplace, it could be logistics players, it could be customs understanding of other markets. So that's one, exploring a new green field. Secondly, would be opening up to partners. SMEs typically have limited resources. They're not like the global or MNCs where they've got access into larger funds and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So they need to be open to work with the bigger partners. For example, DHL, or for example, a global bank.
Mm-hmm.
Because working with global players like us will give you access into markets that we have been operating in for the last 40 years, and we would know what are some of the challenges going into this market.
Mm-hmm.
Thirdly, would be to look at how they could work with the relevant government agencies, the MDECs, the METIs, the Matrix of this world, because we've got so many grants is out there. So many government agencies are willing to help with open arms, but sometimes the SMEs are either not make known of, or they didn't want to go through the hassle of approaching these agencies.
Can I ask what you've viewed in terms of cross-border trends? Are there particular sectors when it comes to SMEs that you see are capitalizing on cross-border e-commerce?
Sure. I'd like to give you an example. Malaysia is very well known for our durian Musang King. So we work with a customer who have all this while been selling just in Malaysia. So we explored two key countries, which is Singapore and Hong Kong. And till today, the profits, I wouldn't say the revenue, obviously domestic gives you more revenue, but the profits that they're able to garner from overseas, because the buying power and the price that they sell in these markets are much higher than what is being sold locally. And that gives them also a sort of a contingency plan. Let's say if the local market goes through a bit of a slump, they've got the overseas market. So that's one, the Durian Express. The other example which I'd like to share will be the bundle customers in the East Coast. Prior to us approaching them for US is a big market for them. Europe is a big market for them. They were just selling, I mean, how many customers can you sell bundle clothing in Malaysia? And typically, the prices sold in Malaysia are much lower than what they can garner in US and the Europe. Mm. We have seen leaps and bounds of growth from these bundle customers as well.
And specifically from the East Coast?
From the East Coast.
Looking at the investments, as we've been talking about, DHL is investing heavily in upgrading its facilities in Malaysia as part of its APAC expansion. Just this month, you unveiled a 13 million ringgit Pry facility in Penang. And last year, in October, you announced a 200 million ringgit investment to built the first AutoSort facility in KLIA. That's expected to be completed in 2023. How do Malaysian operations feature in the bigger picture for DHL? I guess why all this investment into Malaysia in particular?
The amount of investment that we have put in or targeted to put into Malaysia over the next couple of years is an assurance and confidence that a global company like DHL has for Malaysia to be positioned as a key logistics hub for Southeast Asia. So obviously, we are all well known about Singapore being a logistics hub, but Malaysia is slowly coming up as a key logistics hub with the investment from other players like Cainiao into the digital free trade zone. And that has positioned KLIA very well in terms of a Southeast Asia hub. And you've got the halal market coming up, and Malaysia is well positioned to do that. So we, and Penang is sort of a semicon Silicon Valley, and that has stepped up hugely over the last 2-3 years when we saw the trade war between US and China. And that had garnered a lot of FDIs into the northern part of Malaysia because there is a very strong ecosystem and supply chain resilience in the northern side of Malaysia that is able to cater or provide a contingency plan to some of these global companies.
I'm speaking to Julian Neo, Managing Director of DHL Express Malaysia and Brunei. After the break, how is DHL navigating the headwinds to the global economy? Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Thanks for staying tuned to The Breakfast Grill. On the show with me today is Julian Neo, Managing Director of DHL Express Malaysia and Brunei. Earlier, we were discussing the significant investments that DHL has committed to Malaysia and how Malaysia features in its broader logistics network. Now, I want to look at the global targets that DHL has. Deutsche Post DHL Group overall has lofty ambitions under its strategy 2025, including a target of 5.3 billion euros in operating profit for this year. We're seeing rising interest rates. We're seeing inflationary pressures. From the perspective of the Malaysian business, what are the key cost challenges impacting your margins here?
Sure. So I'd like to make a small correction. The numbers that you've quoted, 5.3 is actually 8 billion of EBIT. So 8 billion of EBIT is what we achieved last year, full year 2021 financial year. And we're targeting to hold that number for even 2022, plus minus 5%.
Okay.
With a financial guidance of 8.4 billion euros EBIT by 2024. So in the context of Malaysia, as I've shared, we are number 17 ranked globally. So we are also in accordance to look at that growth. So if you look at the overall market in Malaysia, logistics or supply chain it's got a forecasted CAGR of about 4-5%. So we're looking at maybe doubling that CAGR for our growth in Malaysia.
What are your margins here actually?
Yeah, so global margins are about 17 actually.
17.
So we are, most of the countries are on that average.
So you would be around that double digit, close to 20% average as well. How are you managing this then? Because we are seeing rising fuel costs here. We are seeing a lot of rising commodities prices. And I'm just wondering how that factors into how you price for your Malaysian market here.
Sure. So yeah, as you've said it right, Shazana, one of the biggest cost factor would be fuel. And but to sort of balance the fuel costs, we have got the fuel surcharge. And that's obviously an additional cost for the customers. But I think what we're doing on as a company is to invest in more efficiency, more efficient aeroplanes, aircrafts. And since 2017, we have purchased or invested into 17 777s. Mm-hmm. And these aircrafts are 30% more fuel effective than the regular aircrafts. Not only that, it's more efficient, it flies longer, it carries more. So that's one. Secondly, we're also looking at the automation of our facilities. So obviously, one of the biggest second cost line would be manpower. Mm-hmm. And with the announcement of the minimum salary in Malaysia, you're looking at putting your resource where it's needed most, not cutting resources, not minimizing hiring. We're still hiring hugely the last couple of years, but we're putting a manpower where it's needed most, especially customer fronting, when it's got to do with empathy, when it's got to do with showing care, mm-hmm. when it's got to do with service recovery. But on day-to-day manual stuff, we're looking at digitalization and automation. I'll give you an example. Mm. The new KLIA facility is 400 times more efficient than the current one. It's not just twice bigger, it's not just bigger, but it's 400 times faster because we've invested into a very advanced material handling system, or what we call as AutoSort. Mm. So it's able to handle close to 10,000 pieces of parcels every hour compared to what we have today in Subang, which is only 2,500. And obviously, this was built a long time ago. So that's one example. Secondly, we're looking at a lot of automation through digitalization. I'll give you an example. Prior to pandemic, customers still like to call us because we're 24/7 and we pick up our calls after three rings, not by a robot, by a human being, a warm body. But today, since the pandemic, we've seen an increase in customers not calling us because they're all working from home, so they like to chat. Whether it's on your social media platforms like Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn, or Instagram, or they'd like to chat with the bot, right? So we have also seen that huge increase in terms of calls. So that allows us to actually handle, increase the productivity. So give you an example, one warm body who picks up a call, you can only handle one call at once because you can only speak to one customer. But for a customer agent, we can actually do 3 to 4 chats simultaneously. So you're actually 3 or 4 times more productive.
I see. Yeah. Okay. So the idea is you're keeping costs low through these efficiency measures. Well, have you had to increase your service costs as things go up? Yeah. Like what's the trajectory there?
Correct. So over the last couple of years, we have got a yearly price adjustment, which is usually around 4.9%. And okay. That has been consistent. I think over the last few years, we've also seen inflation gone up, but we've been able to keep prices stable with a 4.9% with all the efficiency initiatives that we've taken, okay. both on hardware and also with our people.
So as long as inflation doesn't go above 4.9% at DHL Malaysia prices,
fingers crossed.
We'll keep it there. Now, I want to talk about climate change awareness and the ESG movement, because these are big trends mobilizing corporate action. Yeah. DHL not excluded. It has come up with a sustainability roadmap. You have a target of achieving net zero by 2050, 50. If I'm not mistaken. So what's the pathway to that vision?
Sure. So on ESG, I like to cover it by E, S, and G. So on the environment point, we're really focusing, investing a lot on clean operations. So like what I mentioned to you earlier, the aircrafts are a huge, huge investments. Not only more efficient aircrafts, we are investing into sustainable aviation fuel. So by 2030, we would like to have 30% of our aircraft flown on SAF, which is a cleaner process of producing fuel.
But also more expensive, right?
Also more expensive, yeah. So that's, again, a balance that we need to look at. So clean operations, then on the ground, by 2030, we are in the midst of converting 60% of our last mile vehicles into electric. Recently, you have also heard that we have signed an MOU with Tenaga Nasional to look at how Tenaga Nasional could support us by installing chargers in our service center. We're looking at the first ones being installed in the Chan Sai Lin service center. So clean operation buildings. From 2020 onwards, all buildings will need to be on clean energy. The latest one that which we recently launched in Pry, 27, close to 28% of its consumption of power is solar powered. In KLIA, again, close to 30% of the facility's power consumption will be solar powered. So after 2020 onwards, all our new buildings will need to be green building. And besides ground, we're also looking at people. We're also looking at how we could have more food couriers, how we could also encourage more self-help. I'll give you an example, a partnership with locker providers like Parcels 365, which is a Malaysian company, are also a big step towards sustainability, because not all customers want you to deliver the shipments to the home. They also want the options of either sending or receiving the shipments through a parcel locker, which is 24/7.
I see. Yeah. So you're looking into those options. I'm thinking about the landscape in Malaysia. How challenging do you think it is to implement all these green logistics measures in the short to medium term? Because it does feel like we are quite far behind when it comes to having that infrastructure necessary for renewable energy options like EVs or whatnot. So I guess what would you want to see progress in that front in order for DHL to be able to achieve what it needs to in Malaysia?
Correct. I think one of the biggest factors we would like is like to see more would be options. So as of today, I'll give you an example, the vans that we are exploring to convert 60%. So we've got about 400 vans in Malaysia. 60% is, which means we need to convert either 25 to 30 vans. It's very limited, very extremely limited. And obviously, if you have 60% of your last mile vehicles on EV or on electric, you need your charging infrastructure. So again, that's also at the infant stage of this time. But with regards to the government policies in terms of supporting clean operations, I think the intention is there. The government agencies have been very open in terms of discussion with us. The good example is TNB. We've been working with them since before the MOU, and that said, they've been giving us a lot of support, not just charging station, but they're also looking at how we could manage our building energy utilization better. So they've got lots of data. So they will come in and sit with us and do assessment of, let's say, a huge service center like the new KLIA, right? How could we improve usage of energy?
Okay, so from DHL's perspective, at least, engagement with the government has been positive. You are kind of in talks to see how things can be done in the most efficient and most, I guess, effective
way.
Looking at transportation policy in Malaysia more broadly and the chatter over all these mega infrastructure projects, what makes you, as you know, from your perspective in DHL, what makes you sit up and pay attention in terms of what projects the government embarks on at the moment?
Yeah. So we work very closely with all government agencies, including both federal and state. I'll give you an example. This is not new. Even during Chris time, even prior to Chris time, we've been working very closely with the, because the FDIs are extremely crucial for Malaysia, because it's such a competitive landscape against the rest of the Southeast Asian countries. So every FDI that is targeted to come into Malaysia, we will work very closely with the government as a sort of a supply chain advisory. It's not a sales pitch, it's not a hard sell, but the investors who wants to look at Malaysia as a hub, we want to know the connectivity, we want to know the turnaround time, we want to know whether it's in a strategic location. And that's where we come in and play our advisory part. And in the recent years, in the last actually 12 months, there was a huge investment. I can't name the company, it's a huge investment that just came in into the northern side of Malaysia. And that was where we worked very closely with the state investment arm, with METI, and with the other government agencies to help support pulling FDIs into Malaysia.
I see. Yeah. So you're actively working with the government pull FDI in.
Yeah.
Is this because you need Malaysia to work?
Yeah.
You've put so much in here, and hence you need this. You need Malaysia to do well in order to, recoup what you've invested here.
Not so much that, but I think if you go and help with the intention to promote global trade, to promote regional trade, when you go with the intention to help the companies, right, end of the day, revenue, shipments and volume will come. So when you put your heart and soul into helping the SMEs or helping relevant government states, right, the revenue is an after effect. It's a lagging KPI. Yeah.
So tell me what your growth targets are for this year then. You've painted quite the positive picture in terms of how DHL sees Malaysia as its regional hub. How are you going to measure growth in the coming year?
Yeah, so I will not be able to share specific growth targets, but 2021 has been a huge, huge growth base year for us. And I've also alluded to earlier that the CAGR is going to be about 4-5%. So we're looking at growing double the CAGR.
Yeah. So you don't see revenues moderating in the next year or so, as things reopen, as things go back to normal, it's not going to go back to that pre-pandemic level for DHL as far as you see?
It will take some time. As of today, as we speak, supply chain is still hugely disrupted. If you go to a car showroom today, you probably wait for 6 months before you get your new vehicle. That's because the parts are not arriving on time. It's stuck somewhere. And today, as we speak, the Ukraine-Russia war is even creating more tensions to the supply chain. And with China opening up, imagine the ports will be so congested. It's as long as the supply chain is not back to normal, I think speed is of the essence, not just with B2B, not just with manufacturing, not just with semicon, but also B2C. As you buy something over the net now, you want it fast. You want it the fastest that you want it door to door. So speed of the essence, and I think this is where the express service will continue to grow on a very strong momentum.
Julian, thank you very much for speaking with me today.
Thank you, Shazana.
I've been speaking to Julian Neo, Managing Director of DHL Express Malaysia and Brunei. This has been The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, where unlimited potential begins.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.